everybody then knew that beer was synonymous with San Miguel. So monopoly talaga yan ng San Miguel, di ba? So when news broke of that new brewery, people knew Tan was able to pull some strings. Ang kwento nun, dapat daw ang itatawag sa bagong brewery ay Lucifer. Lucy for Lucio at Fer for Ferdinand Marcos. Mm. Tapos kalaban nila si San Miguel. Wala lang, funny, di ba? Anyway, syempre, ang kapalit niyang mga sweetheart deals na yan ay pera din. So, si Lucio Tan mismo ang nagsabi sa isang interview how Marcos benefited from him. Sabi niya, and I quote, "President Marcos will not ask directly, maybe indirectly, a project in response of disaster, earthquakes, always asking projects. So many projects, too many projects, always projects, projects, more projects. But when I give a check, I cannot know what portfolio, what folder, what pocket it goes into. They ask and I just give them the money."
Hello sa inyong lahat. Welcome to another episode of podcast, Conversations on Philippine History, Politics, and Society. We are your hosts. I'm Lee Candelaria.
I am Aaron Maliari.
I am Veronica Alporja.
And I am Joselito Epro.
Nagpapatuloy ang ating Shapers and Shakers, Personalities of Martial Law series, with another personality na, to be honest, ay hindi gaanong kailang Marcos crony. Tama, no?
Oo. Yeah, no? So, sino nga ba ang topic natin ngayon? Who's that Pokemon?
Ayan na nga, ano? We will be talking about Lucio Tan, a business tycoon, a rags-to-riches, self-made millionaire, and, surprise, also a Marcos crony.
Pero bakit nga ba? Why is it that we don't really know much about these Marcos cronies, no? So, kumbaga, the way that they have been referred to in our history classes is that Marcos is this evil master who gave favors to certain factions in the political and business elite to his advantage. Pero we do not necessarily pinpoint kung sino ba tong mga to.
I agree. Parang nalimitahan yung kaalaman natin about cronyism na parang limited lang sa definition nito. Pero hindi pa natin nabigyan ng mukha at identity yung mga personalidad na yan. Bakit nga ba?
Yeah, no. So, subukan nating bigyan ng linaw yung misteryo na yan sa episode natin today, no? So, I agree na anumang diskusyon natin ng martial law, dapat pangalanan at ipaliwanag natin yung culpability ng lahat ng involved. And this would entail spotlighting them and what they did during this time.
Thus, this episode. When we were talking about how to discuss cronyism within the context of martial law, gusto ko talaga na ang gawin nating sample ay yung crony na kilala nating lahat, pero hindi natin alam na naging crony pala, no? Or siguro nakalimutan na natin. Kaya naman si Lucio Tan ang pag-uusapan natin, no? But before that, I think we need to define cronyism muna and how Marcos used this to consolidate power. Siguro magandang si Vec ang mag-explain nito.
Pala-decision ka. Pero salamat, no? Salamat sa pag-volunteer sa akin. It is a form of nepotism, kumbaga, or favoritism, sige, sabihin na natin, kung saan yung mga nasa kapangyarihan, in this case, Ferdinand Marcos Sr., ay nagbibigay ng mga pabor, ng mga advantages, ng mga investment or business opportunities dun sa mga select na mga tao, na mga kaibigan niya o mga kamag-anak niya, o kung sino man, with the understanding that such advantage later on result in the benefit of whoever is in power. Right, so mag-identify sila ng mga industriya or sektor na bubuhusan ng pera ng gobyerno. Interesting dito yung sinabi nung ni Caroline Howe, na I think one of the most brilliant scholars in the Philippines right now, na yung cronyism, kapag successful siya, ang tawag dito ay developmental economics. Pero kapag nauwi sa corruption, cronyism, crony capitalism yung tawag dyan.
Yeah, so ibig sabihin itong mga crony na ito, no, na nakatanggap ng preferential treatment, ng mga lucrative government contracts, or even monopolies in the production or trade of certain goods or services, it led to the concentration of wealth and power to a select few.
Exactly. At sa panahon ng martial law, malaking bahagi ang ginampanan nitong cronyism sa paghubog ng political at economic landscape ng bansa. Kasi itong si Marcos, ginamit niya itong mga cronies niya upang makonsolidate ang kapangyarihan at control sa yaman ng bayan, more importantly.
And one of the ways of Marcos Sr. to maximize cronyism ay through business interests. kasama ng mga kaalyado niya, bumuo sila ng close relationship sa mga businessmen and corporations at binigyan ng mga ito ng special privileges and opportunities. So, parang group project ito. Naka-receive sila ng lucrative government contracts, licenses, and permits to operate businesses sa iba't ibang sectors like construction, real estate, logging, at media. Dahil sa pagpabor ng pamahalaan sa mga taong ito, aba, instant yaman or talagang yumaman yung mga taong ito at naging influential sa lipunan.
Yeah, no. So nabanggit na rin nga yung media, no. So isa rin 'yan sa mga kinontrol at yung kinontrol sa pamamagitan ng cronyism, no. So kasi mahalaga ang media for the Marcoses. Kailangan ma-manipulate yung information at ma-suppress, of course, yung dissent and opposition. Kaya naman, Marcos and his allies granted licenses and permits to media companies sa kanyang mga allies. No? So, at itong mga nabigyan ng permit na ito, syempre, hindi sila critical sa gobyerno.
So, nangangamoy ano to, SMNI. No? Siyempre, sa pagbibigay ng preferential treatment at licenses, permits, business opportunities, nabusog talaga yung mga crony. No? At siyempre, may iba ring nabigyan ng mga juicy na posisyon sa pamahalaan kahit na hindi naman qualified. So, again, this sounds familiar, no? Na parang Moka Uson or Larry Gadon.
Indeed. Pero maliban sa business opportunities, media control, political patronage, itong mga cronies na ito ay nagkaroon din ng oportunidad para magkamal ng mga lupain. Kasi yung mga nakumpiska ng pamahalaan na mga negosyo at mga lupa mula sa mga political enemies, mga kalaban, ipinamudmud na lang naman ulit sa mga crony. So you could imagine how sick it was for Marcos to declare the emancipation of farmers, quote-unquote, from land tenancy in the whole country as a land reform area. Samantalang may condition ito. At yun ay rice and corn lang yung kasama, yung sakop ng land reform. So in a way, it was to protect certain cronies din talaga.
Yeah, and I think cronyism had an impact sa economic policies din, diba? Siyempre, all of those pandering to certain members of the business and political elite had to make sense sa mga malalaking, sa mas malaking economic picture, kumbaga. No, so, from the ground to the level of economic policies, nagpatuloy yung impact ng cronyism. The implementation of economic policies that favored the interest of his cronies meant that certain cronies enjoyed monopolies. Kumbaga, ang bumangga, you know, basag, diba? Parang ganun.
And I think this discussion feeds into the ultimate goal of this crony setup, no? To accumulate wealth and power. Cronyism is essentially corruption. While this has existed under different leaderships, halimbawa si Dennis Uy during Duterte's presidency, no, the Marcos years stand out as a sickening example of how cronyism was set into motion to an extent that was never seen before. And I may argue, never seen ever in Philippine history.
So, saan dyan si Lucio Tan? Yan at iba pa sa ating pagbabalik.
Bago natin pag-usapan si Lucio Tan, no, gusto ko lang munang i-emphasize how Marcos and his cronies expanded the gap between the rich and the poor, no. For the first 10 years of Marcos in office, the number of Filipinos who could not meet the minimum requirements of basic necessities such as food, shelter, and clothing rose from 39% to 48% of the population. 84.3% of households were poorly fed. Now, this is despite the fact that the Philippines is so abundant pagdating sa resources to a point that it could feed twice its population.
Kaya gusto ko yung article sa martiallawmuseum.ph which was maintained by Ateneo, no? Yung title ng article ay "It Takes a Village to Loot a Nation: Cronyism and Corruption." Kasi it really indicates na, hoy, hindi lang si Marcos, di ba? Marami silang ninakawan ang bayan. Sabi nga ni Bro kanina, it's a group project ito.
Naalala ko tuloy yung story about Roberto Benedicto na na-appoint bilang chairman of the Philippine National Bank and later ambassador to Japan. Sa mga posisyong ito, madaming questionable deals yung naganap eh. Mula sa pagbibigay ng pondo to crony-owned businesses hanggang sa pagnanakaw ng war reparations money mula Japan patungong Pilipinas. Nahawakan din ni Benedicto ang Philippine Exchange Company or PhilEx na siyang nangasiwa sa international trade ng asukal para sa mga local or lokal na hasyendero. This later led to a monopoly of the sugar industry and the profits were paid to a special fund for the president.
So marami pang iba dyan bukod dito kay Bobby Benedicto. Like halimbawa itong si Antonio Florendo na siya namang naging banana emperor, kumbaga. So gaano kawalang hiya itong si Florendo? Imagine, sa hirap ng mga Pilipino noon at sa dami ng hindi nakakakain, yung mga saging na produkto ng mga plantasyon ay strictly hands-off sa mga plantation workers. Kahit yung mga saging na hindi pwedeng i-export kasi substandard, kesa ipakain sa mga workers, alam niyo kung saan nila ginagamit? Pinapakain nila sa mga baka. At itong mga baka na ito ay nakareserba para kainin ng mga Marcos at ang mga crony nila.
Oh, eh baka naman kasi gusto nila ng Philippine Wagyu.
Banana fed.
Banana fed.
Oo, diba? So, isa pang example, bago tayo dumako kay Lucio Tan, ito medyo familiar siguro sa mga listeners natin, si Danding Cuangco. No, na yes, ay kamag-anak ni na Cory at ni former President Noynoy. No? Cuangco was given power with Enrile to benefit from diverted coco levy funds. So si Cuangco used the farmer's money to invest in whatever industry he pleased. Nabigyan din siya ng sariling private army of 5,000 men. Sobrang daming nanakaw nitong si Danding to a point na he was described as, quote, second only to Marcos in the systematic looting of the Philippines, end quote.
Second lang, kasi syempre si Macoy yung, di ba? Siya pa rin talaga yung parang number one. Iba pa rin ako. So second lang itong si Danding. Anyway, itong si Lucio Tan.
Talaga ba? Pag-usapan natin si Lucio Tan. Finally.
Yun.
Ito na nga, di ba? We all know Lucio Tan, this guy is a billionaire, di ba? But just like other cronies who weathered the test of time and came out even more powerful and wealthier than they used to be, Lucio Tan stands out because of his story. Like, today, he is one of the country's top billionaires, a philanthropist, a civic leader. But he actually has very modest roots, at least according to him. He was a poor Chinese immigrant from Fujian, China. And when he was a kid, he wanted to go to school. But since he has no money for tuition, he didn't want to ask for money from relatives. So he approached his grand uncle to work part-time sa kanyang cigar and cigarette company.
Oh, kala ko poor, pero may kamag-anak na may kumpanya, may cigar company, diba? So, diba, I mean, yes, gets natin na just because may mga kamag-anak tayong mayaman doesn't mean mayaman din tayo, pero still, diba?
Mm, true. I mean, ang kwento niya pa nga ay, he could have easily asked for tuition from relatives, but he chose daw to ask for a job instead.
Taray,
diba? So parang, I mean, sure, I think we get how this origin story works to his favor, ano? He was hired as a part-timer. And according to some stories, according to him mismo, he was hired daw as a janitor.
Baka hindi talaga sila close, malamang.
Diba?
Kasi, bakit yun yung pwede namang clerical work, diba? Pero,
Diba? Tapos kamag-anak mo, i-hire mong janitor. I mean, gusto ko talaga itong mga rags to riches stories eh. No? Anyway, ituloy natin yung story. Ano? He was given a monthly salary daw as a part-timer of 50 pesos. So just to give us perspective, I tried to compute how much this is valued then. Kasi if in today's terms, parang ang litong 50 pesos eh. No? But if he was in high school during this time when he was earning 50 pesos, that should be around his teenager years. So 15 to 18 years old. And during that time, he was born in 1934. So this is around 1950s. I found out that the minimum wage, the first minimum wage, was actually enacted in 1951. At ang rate noon ay 4 pesos a day for urban workers at 250 pesos for rural workers. This means, and I conclude, medyo sizable yung 50 pesos na monthly sweldo ni Lucio Tan. Equivalent ito to a month's work in rural wages or more than half of the minimum of an urban earner. Diba? Sabi ni Lucio Tan, I didn't spend all that. In fact, I had savings.
Highest paid janitor.
Sana lahat ng part-time workers may savings, ano? So, paano ba talaga ito?
Yeah, malamang meron siyang savings, no? Kasi nga naman part-time lang naman, pero ang laki ng rate. Diba? Anyway, he was working for a cigarette company, but he wanted daw to study. So again, a common trope for rags to riches story. You know, oh, I wanted, education is so important to me. He dreamt to be a scientist, but he had to drop out of FEU, where he was taking chemical engineering because he was a working student. He set up his first business selling cigarettes. In 1977, he established Fortune Tobacco Corporation, and through his business acumen, this grew to be the leading tobacco company in the Philippines. Tapos nag-diversify na siya ng businesses niya. He ventured into the liquor industry by acquiring Tanway. Later, he expanded into the airline industry by acquiring Philippine Airlines naman in 1992. And he was credited for stabilizing PAL's operations and improving its financial performance. His empire grew to include Asia Brewery, Eaton Properties, University of the East, at iba pa. Siyempre, he also had business and investments in China and Hong Kong.
Diba? So inspiring. So from a janitor, hindi umano, sa isang factory ng sigarilyo to the king of tobacco. At sabi niya, he never smoked. So, kayo lang magka-answer.
Yeah. Correct. Sana all, diba? Kasi may kamag-anak na may kumpanya, di ba? At may sinusweldong kahit part-time ka ay katumbas pa rin ng minimum wage.
Or sana all naging Marcus crony, di ba?
Tama rin naman.
Mm-hmm. Pero yun nga eh, paano nga ba naging, kasi sa storya natin, parang self-made nga naman talaga siya eh, di ba? Nagtayo siya ng mga kumpanya and all. Pero paano nga ba siya naging Marcus crony? No? We'll talk about that after this quick break. And we're back. So, how did Lucio Tan benefit from being a Marcos crony? It was during the time of Marcos that Fortune Tobacco reached its height. Lucio Tan had a virtual monopoly of the tobacco industry, and his businesses, it became cash generators for Marcos. So Marcos allowed Tan to get into other industries, tulad ng banking, as Tan got a sweetheart deal to acquire the then bankrupt General Bank and Trust Corporation, which was renamed later as Allied Bank. He was also given preferential treatment by being allowed to establish his own brewery as there was a ban in the establishment of breweries during that time.
Nakakatawa nga yan kasi everybody then knew that beer was synonymous with San Miguel. So monopoly talaga yan ng San Miguel, di ba? So when news broke of that new brewery, people knew Tan was able to pull some strings. Ang kwento nun, dapat daw ang itatawag sa bagong brewery ay Lucifer. Lucy for Lucio at Fer for Ferdinand Marcos. Tapos kalaban nila si San Miguel. Wala lang, funny, di ba? Anyway, syempre, ang kapalit niyang mga sweetheart deals na yan ay pera din. So si Lucio Tan mismo ang nagsabi sa isang interview how Marcos benefited from him. Sabi niya, and I quote, "President Marcos will not ask directly. Maybe indirectly. Maybe a project, in response of disaster, earthquakes, always asking for money for projects. So many projects, too many projects, always projects, more projects. But when I give a check, I cannot know what portfolio, what folder, what pocket it goes into. They ask and I just give them the money."
Oh, diba? Parang ang hirap paniwalaan dun, diba? Na wala siyang idea for someone who supposedly had this business acumen, 'di ba? Hindi ka ba OC noon kung saan napupunta yung anyway, no? So, ang hirap paniwalaan, no? So, hindi lang, 'di ba? Hindi lang pera, eh, no? Lucio Tan is talagang he was really given a lot of privileges and tax concessions, 'di ba? At ang nakakatawa ba dito, no? So, itong si current president natin, Bongbong Marcos, yes, the current president, who actually, no, he testified to the privilege and concessions granted to Lucio Tan.
Ayan. So I think mahalaga rin i-contextualize kung paano nga ba nangyari yung mga yan. After the Marcoses fell from power, na-spotlight naman ngayon yung mga cronies. Nabanggit ni Vec kanina yung interview ni Lucio Tan kung saan sinabi niya yung mga ways kung paano nakakuha ng pera si Marcos from his cronies. But I think we all agree na hindi yan ganun kadali. It was through influence, concessions, privileges, and protection. These all disappeared post-Marcos. Lucio Tan later faced numerous investigations. Most importantly ay yung kaso niya na may utang siya sa gobyerno na $1 billion. Dollars, ha? In taxes. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court ruled against the claims of the Philippine government, hindi dahil sa substance of the claim, but because of some procedural oversight.
Na technical, oo. I mean,
galing ng lawyers niya.
Yeah, Estelito Mendoza. So, ganyan talaga, no? Parang if you can get away with some technicalities, parang nawala na yung accusation. So parang yung $1 billion na yun, sana napunta. Ang nakakatawa dito, in 2007, itong si Bongbong Marcos, your president, testified that in fact, Lucio Tan and Ferdinand Marcos, I mean, Team Lucifer, were actually business partners. No, business partners daw talaga yung dalawang yan. He reasserted that some assets owned by Tan actually belonged to his father, a direct contradiction to Tan's statement in the year 1987 when asked about the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos being his business associate. Itong si Lucio Tan, he denied that Marcos had any ownership interest in any of his companies, and he only acknowledged that he and Marcos were friends. So, friends nang sila. Very showbiz yung sagot, no? According to the Presidential Commission on Good Government, Bongbong Marcos revealed the formation of this holding company in November 1979 by Ferdinand Marcos and Lucio Tan to acquire and consolidate the shares of stock in Lucio Tan's companies such as Fortune Tobacco, Formosa Farms, Asia Brewery, and Allied Bank. Marcos was supposed to own 60% of this holding company while Lucio Tan owned 40%.
Ayan, so si BBM din talaga mismo yung nagpatunay na kung paano ang isang sitting president ay pumasok sa business ventures na obviously was unbecoming of a president, lalo na kung i-consider na at the time unlimited and unchecked yung kapangyarihan yung nahawakan niya. Ang talino talaga nito ni Bongbong Marcos. I think he really dug their own grave. I mean, he could have, you know. And then back in 2007, itong si BBM had the gall to even claim stake to the largesse of Tan. I mean, dear listeners, can you imagine that? It's like BBM was saying na, "Uy, pinayaman ka ng tatay ko sa mga kumpanya na actually may share siya." So, ibalik mo, parang entitled din kami dyan. Just so dumb, right?
And I think what this reveals is that the relationships between Marcos and his cronies, which resulted into the gaping disparity between the rich and the poor in the time of Marcos, bore fruit as the unthinkable wealth held by Lucio Tan. Imagine nyo na lang kung ilang cronies noon na hanggang ngayon ay napakayayaman pa din. Their wealth is built on the backs of the workers in banana plantations na wala nang makain. Makikita pa nila na mas masarap pa yung kinakain ng mga bakang inaalagaan nila, no? Or halimbawa ay yung mga nagsimatayang mga Pilipino sa Negros Famine noong 1980s. Or I mean yung libo-libong biktima ng karahasan at impunity ng Marcos dictatorship.
Yeah, and yet today, we are led to believe that it was the grit and determination of Lucio Tan that made him the billionaire that he is today. It was his desire to get ahead in life despite his roots as an impoverished immigrant from China that made him the self-made billionaire of today.
At sana naparating natin sa mga listeners yung indignation ng irony ng narrative na yan, ano? So to our listeners, sa susunod na makarinig kayo ng story about self-made billionaires, try to look more closely into that narrative. What you might find might actually shock you.
Actually, going into this episode, I would admit may kaunting kaba kasi these are powerful people we'll be talking about, who were able to stage a comeback despite their sketchy histories. But I am sure that what we revealed and talked about in this episode and in the past episodes is based on actual historical information that is publicly available, including a testimony from the president, BBM himself.
Yeah, so tune in again next week for another episode of Shapers and Shakers, Personalities of Martial Law. For now, check out our earlier seasons and episodes. We are in all major podcast platforms and our episodes are also available through our YouTube channel, Podcast TV.
And of course, follow our social media pages for more updates on the show. So we are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Threads, at bisitahin nyo na rin ang aming website, podcast.org. So that's it for today. Until next time, keep safe and have a good day.